Well, good evening. It's time for our Wednesday night Bible study to begin. We have been studying the comparison of the temples of Moses' time, which was a tabernacle, a tent temple, and we are comparing that to the temple of the body in our Christian dispensation. And we had been talking for the last couple weeks in our workbook on page 9. We had gotten how Aaron was appointed as the high priest of the temple of Moses, and Jesus Christ is our high priest today. And we have talked about how in the Mosaical temple, God was separate from the tribes of the people, and his presence was found in the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle. And that's what the priests were to serve the people before God. The people just couldn't come stand right in the presence of God and minister to his wishes and his sacrifices and his worship and praise. And so it took someone holy and pure to be the go-between, more or less to speak. So we noticed last week how the Christians are now priests before God also, and we are separate from the world. And so we have gotten to the point that last week we had talked about how page 9, how priests offer sacrifices on the great altar of the temple compound. And so this is what we'll be covering tonight. And I have really been enjoying this study because it has brought to light and really should make as we make these comparisons, bring this to life for us, to make it in our mind's eye, and we'll talk about this more later, how if we could visualize the temple of our mind, and as we make sacrifices, as we are priests, put ourselves in that mindset, and it will make our worship more special. It will bring a great deal of actually interest and it makes it more lifelike. And so as we go through these things, start trying to shift ourselves from just the physical body that we have and think about our worship and our function as a priest and making our sacrifices, of which we'll talk about in a little bit. Make them personal to us as we do this. And that's a goal that I want to try to bring about in this class. So, as we are talking about the temple of Moses now, the priests are to offer sacrifices on the great altar in the temple. And remember, we are speaking about the part of the duties of the priest under the old law was to offer sacrifices on behalf of the people, like we just mentioned. And this was to be done on the great altar before the doorway of the tabernacle. Now, as we are coming up to that temple complex or the tabernacle complex of the outer wall, and we're going to talk about this in just a minute, I want to stop here for just a minute and consider something that I thought has been very intriguing. It just so happens that most of us are involved in a daily Bible reading, and we happen to be talking about in our Bible reading, we're in Exodus, and we have been looking at the assimilation and the construction of the tabernacle. And what has just overwhelmed me is we have been studying this for, reading about this for the last week or so, how many chapters are devoted to the construction and design of the tabernacle, which was inspired by God to Moses, and Moses has made the, and we'll talk about this in a little while too. Moses was given the instructions to, of a pattern to make the tabernacle. And God told Moses to make this exactly like the pattern I give you. And so when you consider all of the intricate details that God had given Moses on how to build the tabernacle, of the lampstands and of the different poles overlaid with gold and the different furnishings of the holy place and the altar and the basin of water, it gets down to the minute detail, which is beautiful in the reading. And it kind of steps back and why give that much detail? Or why spend so much time talking about the tabernacle? And I did a count today. Exodus has about 40 chapters. And I started counting all the chapters that were involved in the pattern of the tabernacle, the construction, and the assimilation of all of the materials of it, and the making of the priest's garments. There is over a dozen chapters devoted out of the 40 in Exodus. I mean, he's spending as much time on this as he did on getting the children of Joseph and the children out of Egypt. Think about this. Does anybody have any idea why God would want to record and spend so much time on the intricate details of the tabernacle? Okay, Jay?
He wants it the way he wants it.
I love that answer. And as he said, make it just so. I mean, it's... And a good point there, Jay. When God is specific about something, that's exactly how he wants it and shouldn't. We can't change a specific, can we? Good point. Any other thoughts why this would be so much time spent on this? Paul?
Well, it would illuminate how serious God is and how concerned he is in preparing the people for the coming of a superior temple, which will be in Christ ourselves.
Okay.
As well as the church, the way the Ephesian writer describes it. And then beyond that, the even more superior nature of the temple that is in heaven in the presence of God. So all those details then are supposed to prepare the people to think of the intricacy and the well-thought-out nature of God's plan, and that God is detail-oriented. It implies that we need to be equally detail-oriented with regard to everything God asks for. In all three dispensations, God has been specific about worship.
Mm-hmm.
And even the nature of the things offered to him, as well as the means by which it's offered. Cain and Abel's offering in the beginning. Nadab and Abihu's false fire that they used, or the incorrect fire that they used. All of these serve to illustrate for us that God not only wants what he wants, but he wants us to be as careful as he is about these things. Because these are special. These are important. They are separate from the world. Now, we can be casual about the way we do other things in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But God is saying, I don't want you casual about this. This is sacred and holy. It needs to be exact.
Thank you for that. That helps us understand that, like Jay said, God wants it this way. And as we mentioned before, this was going to be a pattern. This tabernacle was going to be a pattern for the magnificent temple of Solomon. And it's going to be a pattern for the temple that we have today of our bodies. And you can even project ahead that this is part of the pattern that will be in heaven of the true temple. And I've got to think about something the other day. Which came first? The tabernacle or the temple in heaven? Well, in the timeline of history, well, the tabernacle did, but in the planning, which came first? Perhaps God knew what his temple was going to be in heaven. He made the temple for us, of our bodies, to kind of represent that. And in order to help us understand that, he gave the tabernacle of Moses' day. All this just weaves itself together to prepare us and help us to live, for us, spiritual lives in that temple.
It also makes me think of when I was young and my daddy would say, you do this, you do this, and you do this. And then at the end he'd say, did you hear me? That was his code for, you have no excuse to not do it exactly the way I just told you. And it seems that God gives us kind of the same hint. Says, pay attention here.
Yeah, that's a good way to say pay attention. All right, Paul?
The Hebrew writer, speaking in general of elements of the old law, refers to them as being shadows of the truth. I think you remember perhaps reading that in the book of Hebrews. These things are shadows of the truth, which would be the true temple of God. But simply because they're shadows doesn't mean that they are any less important or less holy. God was wanting them to be so careful with all these things because it would be a testimony of his holiness. Go over the top, so to speak, in terms of doing it just right, because I have done just right for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God has been very careful. But you and I, we have to focus on the specificity that God gives there as a testimony that this is unique, this is special. In a recent conversation we had, we talked about how that everything was just so, down to what you said was the little embroidered pomegranates on the robe and so forth. Everything mm-hmm. was specific. There's a reason for that, and the reason is that these people are going to see this as distinct from their own lives. They're going to come to the tabernacle and later on come to the temple as people who are realizing this place is clean. This place is special. This place is holy. I'm approaching it as someone less than clean.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am me coming into the presence of God. The tabernacle and the temple and later on the Christian temple, so to speak, this is the place where God meets man, and we need to see it as special. And that's why all of the effort went into that.
Thank you. And I love that reminding us, the temple is where God meets man. And that place where he meets us has to be glorious. And that helps get us in the frame of mind when we approach the temple. And so, as we have determined, now we're going to talk about how, during the Mosaical time, how the sacrifices were made on the great altar. And what I'd like to do before we do that, I want us to get a visual of the tabernacle here. And I'm going to get a little closer, especially I want those online to be able to see this blow up and cut away of the tabernacle. And so what we're going to do in the next few weeks, we're going to come into the temple. We're going to talk about the great altar here where the sacrifices were made. We're going to Then we're going to talk about the laver or the basin of pure water. And then here is the holy place where the different lampstand and the altar of incense and the showbread are placed. And back in the back part is the Holy of Holies, where God's presence is made known, where the Ark of the Covenant is. And as you can see around the camp, around the tabernacle, the different tribes are camped. And it so happens that God has arranged this tabernacle to be placed in a direction every time it's set up. And the gateway would be toward the east. And so as you come in, then it gives specific instructions of where the furnishings are. And it says that the candle lampstand will be to the south and the showbread to the north. And so that's why we know why these are placed in this order. And so what I want to do, I want to choose, this is a beautiful depiction of this, and next week we'll have some on a PowerPoint just kind of showing some of the basic diagram of this to keep up with this. But I'd like to everybody to get a closer glimpse of this now as we talk about this. You can look at the detail, and you can see some of the what we're talking about tonight is the altar and how the tabernacle is set up between the altar is set up before the basin that's set up there. So the altar is where all of the animal sacrifices were to be burnt, and there are specific instructions on that. So let's talk about shortly here some of the how God directs the sacrifices to take place. Let's turn over to Leviticus, the third chapter. Leviticus, the third chapter, 1-5. Larry, if you would read Leviticus, the third chapter, verses 1-5.
When his offering is the sacrifice of a beast offering, if he offers it of the herd, whether male or female, he shall offer it without blemish before the Lord. And he shall lay his hand on the head of his offering and kill it at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. And Aaron's sons of the priest shall sprinkle the blood all around on the altar. Then he shall offer from the sacrifice of the peace offering an offering made by fire to the Lord. The fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is on the entrails. The two kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flank. And the fatty loaf attached to the liver above the kidneys. He shall remove. And Aaron's son shall burn it on the altar upon the burnt sacrifice, which is on the wood that is on the fire, as an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord.
Okay, thank you so much. So here in Leviticus, he is telling the priest on how to make the offerings. And The animals that would be sacrificed were offered as a peace offering, and it was said to slay it at the doorway. So the slaying of the animal would be done here at the doorway, and they were to sprinkle the blood on the altar. And you can imagine all of the blood that was shed around this area. And then they were to place it on here to as a burnt offering. And as this depiction is, the smoke would go up to God as a sweet-smelling aroma. And And basically, most all of the sacrifice, there was many types of sacrifices, but basically this was what was done each time there was a sacrifice offered that included a burnt offering. And what is, as we talked about what Larry read, this is not a pretty sight. We're talking about the entrails, and we're talking about the blood, and we're talking about killing oftentimes a young, innocent, unblemished goat or a lamb. And that's not a pretty sight. Why do you reckon this is done like this? Have you thought about sin is not very pretty? Sin is ugly. And the sacrifices that deal with that sin cannot be very pretty. And so this should remind people how the seriousness of sin is. Because look at the sacrifice that has to be dealt with that. Now this was in Moses' time. And we've all talked about how even greater the sacrifice was that Jesus made. So keep this in mind, that sin is a terrible thing to do.
Paul? The animals that they were offering would quite often be a animal that was the best of the herd and in its prime.
Uh-huh.
Or if it was the lamb or the younger animals, they would represent purity. So you have purity and strength being offered for the sins. And it would be a visible reminder to the people that the innocent have to die for my sins. The innocent ones are the ones that have to pay for my sins because I can't pay for them. And then all of the blood that was shed was to be a visible reminder to them that a life had to be spent for my sins. So we have innocence and life being spent for my sins. And that would make me very aware each time an offering was made like that.
I am so glad you brought that up, because has anybody been around lambs and young goats? They are the cutest thing in the world. You hold one and they're almost cuddly, white lamb. They're so gentle. And, okay, put this in mind. I've sinned. I have to take my sacrifice. So I get and pick the best one. Oh, there he is. So I pick him up and I take him and offer this to the priest, which I see him slain in front of me. I mean, that has to grab you. Well, that's why it's a reminder, Paul, thank you for sharing that, of what I did to cause that. And this goes exponentially higher with Christ. Jay?
And let's not forget what it does to the Creator of all of those perfect sacrifices.
Okay.
Whether it be the animals or His own only Son. We think, well, why does God demand all of this from us because of sin? There's certainly no joy derived from it by Him.
Right.
And it just goes that much further to show not only the price that has to be paid, but the price that He's willing to pay.
Right. Good point. And like I say, it's better to obey than sacrifice. That's all part of that very same thing. Thank you for that good comment. Let's turn over to Leviticus 17, 1 through 6. Leviticus 17, 1 through 6. Sandy, if you will, read that when you get there.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and to his sons and to all the sons of Israel, and say to them, 'This is what the Lord has commanded, saying, any man from the house of Israel who slaughters an ox or a lamb or a goat in the camp, or who slaughters it outside the camp, and has not brought it to the doorway of the tent of meeting, to present it as an offering to the Lord before the tabernacle of the Lord. What guiltiness is to be reckoned to that man? He has shed blood, and that man shall be cut off from among his people. The reason is so that the sons of Israel may bring their sacrifices, which they were sacrificing in the open field, that they may bring them in to the Lord at the doorway of the tent of meeting, to the priest, and sacrifice them as sacrifices of peace offerings to the Lord. The priest shall sprinkle the blood on the altar of the Lord at the doorway of the tent of meeting, and offer up the fat and smoke as a soothing aroma to the Lord.
Thank you so much. Here we can see again the process that was taking place when a sacrifice was made, how it was burnt, and as once again that sweet smelling aroma was a sign of obedience, but it was a sign of justice actually, and justice is being dealt with here. So we can see that Aaron was the high priest here. The sons were priests under that. And at verse 6, I like this verse there. It says that the work of the priest is to minister to God for the sacrifices of the people. And by sprinkling of the blood and on the altar and of the tent of meeting. And so this was their duty as priests.
If we could stay with that just a moment.
Yes, please.
You notice in that text that he says with regard to the people who have been going out and make their offerings in the field. And you know, their attitude is right. They want to make an offering to God, but they're going out into the field to do it.
Oh.
On their own.
Uh-huh.
And the Moses instructs the people, you cannot do that anymore. In fact, if you do that, you're guilty of bloodshed and cut off from the people. You must bring all your offerings to the Lord, to the door of the tent of meeting, and let the priest address the matter of the offering from there. You can't go out there in the field and make your offering on your own. You have to follow my worship pattern. And what that says to us is that for those today who would change God's worship pattern, whether through good intentions or whatever the case may be, God doesn't appreciate that. He expects it to be done according to the way He wants it done. And for those persons who believe that they can be saved and be a Christian without being part of a church, you know, this text tells us clearly that you have to follow the pattern that God sets for worship. You just can't go out in your field and serve the Lord that way.
Mm-hmm.
His expectation is that you be part of the pattern He established.
Which reminds me of the verse, they had the zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. And so often that's an attitude of, I'll worship God my own way, and this goes right against that very, very thought there. Jay?
Just real quick, Steve, I know I go back to it a lot, but it just fits. The family unit.
Okay.
What kids can look at their mom and dad and say, I'm going to obey you the way I want to, and that's okay? It just doesn't work that way.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. It's obedience, but it's a loving obedience type thing to be followed. Good point. Jill, if you will, let's go over to 1 Chronicles 6, verses 48 and 49. 1 Chronicles 6, 48 and 49.
Their brethren, the Levites, were appointed to every kind of service at the tabernacle of the house of God. But Aaron and his sons offered sacrifices on the altar of burnt offerings and on the altar of incense for all the work of the most holy priest, and to make atonement for Israel, according to all that Moses, the servant of God, had commanded.
Okay, look what it's saying here, that the Levites, in verse 48, are appointed for the service of the tabernacle. It can't be just anybody. God has chosen that tribe, the Levites, to minister unto him. And in 49, it talks about how Aaron and the sons, which were the priests, were to work at the holy place in that service. And later we'll look at this in more detail, and especially how the priests were going to have to be pure and holy. They would have to serve before God in the temple in a holy state. They had to be sanctified. They had to be set apart for holy use. And we're going to look now at the comparison of the work of the priesthood that we're involved now. And as we start to think about this, that we are priests and offering sacrifices that the priest did, we just covered. What are some of the sacrifices that we could be making as we serve as priests in the temple? And this, we're just about to discuss that, but I just want you to think ahead a little bit. Think of things, of ways of sacrifices that we as priests might offer. Okay, as we look across here, that how Christ is the perfect sacrifice, we are going to be talking now about the duties of the priest as we offer sacrifices in the Christian temple. And the sacrifice of animals in the Mosaical time, or the Mosaical law, was lacking. It was incomplete. But what happens now is that Jesus Christ, our sacrifice, is the perfect sacrifice. He not only was the high priest to take in the sacrifice and mediate between God and man, but he was the sacrifice as he entered heaven as the high priest. And this is, let's all turn over to Hebrews, the 9th chapter. This explains it so well. This is one of the great passages I love in Hebrews, the 9th chapter, explaining this, how that as we read this, and we talked about this recently, I did it recently about when we talked about the Lord's Supper. But let's look at Hebrews 9, verses 11 through 14. Tom, if you would, read Hebrews 9, 11 through 14.
So when Christ appeared as the high priest of the good things to come, he entered through the greater and the more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this creation. For not through the blood of goats and calves, but through his own blood, he entered the holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of goats and bulls and of ashes of a heifer sprinkled those who have been defiled and sanctified for the cleansing of the flesh, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? Through where, Steve?
Yeah, that's good.
Good enough? Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. This is one of the great passages that show how Christ became the perfect sacrifice. And look back up at verse 9. I want to preface this a little bit in verse 9. It talks about, which is a symbol for the time then present, according to which both gifts and sacrifices are offered, which cannot make the worshiper perfect in conscience. He's talking about the old law and the sacrifices. The animal sacrifices, it says, cannot make the worshiper perfect in conscience. So as we get back down to verse 11, it establishes that Christ is the high priest, and he entered the holy place, and this holy place was not made by hands. What could that be but heaven itself? And in verse 12, the sacrifice is not the blood of animals, but through his own blood. This is the pure, holy blood of the sacrifice of Jesus. Talk about innocent. Jesus was innocent. Talk about pure and holy. That's the way he was. But he was sacrificed. It was the perfect sacrifice. And it was done once for all. Doesn't have to be done once a year, as the high priest would have done. And as the blood of bulls and goats from the old law or Old Testament was sacrificed to flesh, the blood of Christ is much better in that, look at verse 14, it cleanses your conscience. Look how much better that is. Now compare back to verse 9 that we just read, how verse 9 said it, the sacrifice of animals could not give you a clear conscience or cleanse your conscience. But now the blood of Christ is much better in that it cleanses your conscience. All our guilt is taken away. And verse 12, and what's the end result? Eternal salvation is obtained. Whoa, this is amazing how this has come together that makes us feel right now, because we are right. It makes Christ's sacrifice makes us pure and holy if we accept it. And our sacrifice, or accept the blood of Jesus. Jay?
Thinking about the difference between the sacrifice of animals and of Christ. That animal had no choice.
Right, that's a good point.
That animal didn't knock on your door and say, hey, you've done wrong, but I'll pay the price for it.
Uh-huh.
And so it seems like that might play into the conscience there as well. Whereas Christ has told us, I did this because I love you. Your slate is clean.
Uh-huh.
And it changes the way our conscience is. And I also think of hearing of people that after they were baptized or even had been a Christian but did something and said, I just don't know that I can be forgiven for this.
Mm-hmm.
There's still something wrong with that conscience there.
Yeah.
Because it tells us right here, our conscience should be clean if we have truly confessed and turned from our sins.
I like your idea. The animals didn't have a choice. Christ did, didn't he? Good point. Now we're talking about how Christ is the perfect sacrifice on page 9 here. Now we're going to be talking about how Christians offer sacrifices as priests. We noticed that how Christ, being our high priest, sacrificed himself. So what do we as priests offer as our sacrifices? Or what kind of sacrifices do we make? And so we're going to talk about how the Christians are to offer sacrifices as priests. And let's nail down the fact that we are priests, and that together we are a priesthood. And so let's turn over to 1 Peter. We're in Hebrews there, just to skip over to 1 Peter, the 2nd chapter. And let me read verse 5. Or verse 4 and 5. It says, and coming to him as a living stone, rejected by men, but choice and precious in the sight of God. Now, coming to him as a living stone rejected by men, who would that be? Jesus. Yeah, remember there's other passages. He's the chief cornerstone. Well, this is what it's talking about here. But it's precious in the sight of God. Now look at verse 5. For you also, as living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house for the holy priesthood. And what's the purpose of that? To offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Christ. So we are a royal priesthood. What's the purpose of that? Is to offer up spiritual sacrifices. What kind of sacrifices? It says those acceptable to God. So this establishes our priesthood, and we are building up, as it says, into a spiritual house as a holy priesthood. Okay, let's turn over to Philippians 2, verse 17. Paul, read that, if you will, Philippians 2, verse 17.
Yes, and if I am being poured out as a drink offering on the sacrifice and service of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all.
Okay, this is so neat. Paul's talking here, and it says, but I am being poured out as a drink offering. That's a type of sacrifice. And what is it for? Upon the sacrifice of your faith. And, you know, when it's talking of this is making it personal. These sacrifices are personal as a priest. And let's look over at Galatians 5. Galatians 5, verse 24. I'll read that one. It says, now those who belong to Christ have crucified the flesh with its passion and desires. It says to crucify the flesh. Are we taking a big knife and hitting our arms and crucifying our flesh, hurting it? No. He's talking about, what does it say, our fleshly desires. If we belong to Christ. And it says to put it to death. Now, if I took a cane knife and hit it across my arm, that would hurt. When we crucify our passions and desires, does that hurt? Yeah. It hurts to give up those things that we have that temporary physical excitement or rush, or have to give up some addictive thing. That hurts when we put those things to death. But that's part of the sacrifice that we're making. So as we then that's part of our sacrifice that we are to make as priests. And I'd like to do one more passage back to Hebrews 13. And we'll close up our class tonight. In Hebrews 13, it talks about how in verses 15 and 16, it says, through him then let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God. That is the fruit of our lips. Give thanks to his name. And do not neglect in doing good. For such sacrifices God is pleased. So we can see here that in verse 15 it talks about the sacrifice of praise. You know, we don't think about that as a sacrifice, but God's calling it that. The sacrifice of praise and singing. And it's the fruit of our lips that comes as part of that sacrifice. And it talks here that giving thanks is a part of our sacrifice. And then in verse 16, doing good is a sacrifice that pleases God. So as you see, these are some of the things that we as priests can start making our sacrifices in our temple that we're to do. And so we're going to stop right there. Yes, Tom?
I just want to ask, maybe I missed you. Did you mention Romans 12 in your class? For it says, I urge you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. So I think that's going along with what you're saying, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, and that which is good and acceptable and perfect. So I think that's along the same lines. So
that is a perfect, what's that passage again?
Romans 12, 1 and 2.
Romans 12, 1 and 2. That is a perfect, thank you for that. We'll put that in on our revising.
Real quickly, the passage that Tom just read kind of correlates to what Peter was saying in 1 Peter 2:5 about spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ.
Uh-huh.
We have religious people who claim to be religious, walking on faith good, that may not be making those spiritual sacrifices that are acceptable because they're ignoring some of the things that we need to do out of God's word. Be sure that our sacrifices are acceptable to God.
Yeah, I love that. Acceptable God, that they match what he considers a sacrifice. Now, we're about halfway through those, our spiritual sacrifice. Be thinking this coming week, what might be some other areas of sacrifice that we make as priests? Thank you for the wonderful comments that everyone has made, and just been enjoying this study so much. So we will pick that up next week.